Hi, my name is Eloise, and welcome to the Take Me to the World Musical Theater Podcast. This is a podcast about musicals, obviously. I love musicals, but I'm not an expert. I like to say I'm a musical theater enthusiast, so take things that I say with a grain of salt. Sometimes I like to swear because musicals fucking rule. I like to let you know if I'm going to spoil any shows if you want to watch them before continuing on with this episode. And today I'm going to be spoiling Oklahoma and The Sound of Music. Now, both of those musicals have movie adaptations of them. Those can be found for the resources of this show. That is available by going to takemetotheworld.com, click on the podcast category at the top of the page, and go to this episode, which is episode 25, and there I'll link to cast recordings, these movie adaptations. If there's a major run happening at the time of this episode's release, I might link to that as well to get tickets. Let's get on to episode 25, which is all about a brand new series that I'm starting. That's right, it's another series. It's gonna be called Golden Age Musicals. So let's get into a little bit of backstory. So a while back I was watching Schmigadoon on Apple TV, and this is a musical comedy about a couple played by Keegan-Michael Key and Cecily Strong who go on a wilderness retreat to fix their relationship, and they stumble upon a magical town called Schmigadoon where everything is a musical. And the catch is they can't leave until they find true love. So the show has two seasons. It's a lot of fun for musical theater fans because season one pokes fun of Golden Age musicals that are from the 1940s and 1950s, think The Music Man, Carousel, Oklahoma, those kind of shows. It has this sort of classic Broadway feel, and even the title Schmigadoon is a nod to the musical Brigadoon. Now season two, the happy town of Schmigadoon becomes Schmicago, and that's a darker, grittier city inspired by countercultural musicals of the 60s and 70s, like Hair and Jesus Christ Superstar, Pippin, and then more cynical and darker vibes of Chicago, Cabaret, and Sweeney Todd. And if you know those musicals, you're going to really enjoy season two. Right now, there isn't a third season. It was written, but the series wasn't renewed. And I've seen a lot of folks online mourn the loss of Schmint, and honestly, I would have been there for it because Rent was my favorite musical, and I'm sure they would have done a take on sort of bigger Broadway commercial Andrew Lloyd Webber kind of smash musicals like that. Right now, that series is completely finished. I enjoyed it. I didn't enjoy it enough to keep the trial of Apple TV that I had. If you have Apple TV or you want to get a trial, it's a fun, binge-worthy show to watch. There's only 12 episodes and they're 30 minutes each, so you can easily finish the series in a few days. So watching Schmigadoon got me thinking about my own experience with musicals, and I found the first season was okay because I was a lot less familiar with those Golden Age musicals. But the second season, I fucking loved it because those musicals I know a lot better, and some of my all-time favorite musicals like Cabaret and Sweeney Todd were major inspirations for that season. And even when they referenced shows I hadn't seen like Pippin, I could still catch the vibe they were going for. There's a big gap in my musical theater knowledge, especially with pre-1965 musicals. I've seen a few Golden Age musicals, most of them only once and years ago, and most of those were movie adaptations. So I've decided to start a new series on this podcast, Golden Age of Musicals. It's another series I'm adding to the list along with my Visual Elements series, which I'm still doing. There isn't going to be a particular order here, just whenever I manage to catch one of these musicals, I'll do an episode about it. And I'll still be putting out other podcast episodes that aren't about Golden Age musicals. So I'll define Golden Age musicals in just a second here. I'll just say that this episode, I'll link to it in future Golden Age musical episodes to kind of explain what the series is about, so I won't be repeating myself over and over again. Golden Age musicals, they're musicals that I'm mostly going to focus on stage adaptations, or musicals that started as stage adaptations, I should say, rather than musicals that started as film musicals from this time period, although I might do an episode on that. They're musicals that came about from like the early 1940s to the mid-1960s. Some people might say a little bit earlier, some people might say a little bit later. That's kind of the time period that I have. With this series, I might not be able to watch every musical that is on my list, and I will link to the list in the show notes for this episode. A lot is going to depend on what's playing at local theaters and what local theater companies are putting on around me. So while I'd love to see all of them on stage, I can't promise that there's going to be a production of South Pacific that I can see on stage, so some of these I might be watching the movie adaptations for. So with this series, I know that musicals have changed a lot over the years, and I understand that some of these older shows might have outdated language or ideas that won't sit all today, but they were influential in shaping the landscape of musical theater. So I am interested in seeing them through that lens and how they influenced what came next, what still resonates with me, and maybe what doesn't. I'm not going to do a 6 degrees of separation between these musicals necessarily, although I kind of am with this first one. And I definitely won't be ranking them on some sort of scale of 1 to 10, how much I like them. This is about my personal experience with each musical, and since we're all biased in some way, I'm going to be biased with these musicals. This is not an objective podcast where I'm just telling you the history. I'm going to tell you how I feel. I likely will talk about a couple, 2 or 3 different musicals in one episode. So today's episode, I'm going to be talking about Oklahoma and The Sound of Music, because after I kind of watched Schmigadoon and I was starting to think about this, I found out that there was a local theater company that was putting on Oklahoma, which was a musical I'd seen the movie version of like years ago, but I didn't really remember a lot of it. Oklahoma, though, it's one of those musicals that has some songs that have become really well known, like the title track, Oklahoma, and Oh What a Beautiful Morning, and Surrey with the Fringe on Top, that you may have heard in other places. And then the other show that was coming up was The Sound of Music. The interesting thing with this is both of these shows are by Richard Rodgers and Oscar Hammerstein II. They're referred to as Rodgers and Hammerstein. They were very famous musical theater composer lyricist from this time period, and Oklahoma was sort of the very first book musical. And it's also a musical that is kind of considered the start of this golden age of musicals. Now, some people might give another example, but generally this is kind of the start. So let's go back. What the fuck is a book musical? So a book musical is a musical where there is a book. There is a story, there is a plot, there are characters, and the musical progresses through the plot and the characters. Now, I haven't really talked about the history of musical theater. My understanding is that musical theater evolved from several different art forms. Over the years, things like opera with, you know, serious singing and sad, tragic operas eventually gave way to lighter operettas like Pirates of Penzance by Gilbert and Sullivan. That kind of evolved to musical theater. Musical theater also has elements of other art forms like vaudeville and things like that. Musicals kind of before this time period. No, there are exceptions, because there was something like the Wizard of Oz, which is a musical film, started as a film, and then later got stage adaptations. And The Wizard of Oz clearly has a plot and a thing. For the most part, musicals were very, like, little comedic acts almost. There wasn't necessarily a book storyline. There weren't musical motifs as we kind of know them today. Musical motifs is where there's like a little musical theme that's played and it represents a character or something like that. Like the Bean theme from Into the Woods, or the dun 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 from Hamilton that tells you that's the exposition. There's just elements of musical theater as we know it today that kind of originated with Oklahoma. Is that saying that Oklahoma knocked it out of the park and you will watch it and you'll go, oh, this is exactly like watching the musical Wicked or something more modern like Hadestown? No, there's going to be things that have changed and evolved because, again, art and stuff evolves. But Oklahoma was sort of very pivotal for musical theater. Here's the thing, though. I'm not a huge fan of Oklahoma. It's okay. And I think part of it is because some of it is pretty outdated. It is a musical that is based on a book. Although when you're taking like a novel or something like that and adapting it to a musical, obviously things are going to change. I've not read the book, Oklahoma. The novel that it's based on is called Green Grow the Lilacs by Lane Riggs. And it was first published in 1931. And then the musical debuted, I think, in 1943, somewhere around that time period. Yeah, 1943 is when the musical debuted. And then it's had a couple movie adaptations as well, including one in the 1950s. The musical Oklahoma is kind of set in the state of Oklahoma, obviously. But it's set sort of just before Oklahoma becomes a state, which happened in the early 1900s. It was one of those things when I was watching it that I was like, oh, it would be really interesting, because like, I'm sure back when this first debuted on Broadway that there were people, or there could have been people in the audience, depending if they traveled from Oklahoma to New York, but there could have been people in the audience that were alive and remember the transition from Oklahoma not being a state to Oklahoma being a state. I think it was called Oklahoma Territory, because they sing a song about that. I'm not a huge fan of the musical. Like, it's not horrible, but it's also not one of those musicals where I'm like, well, I'm gonna go watch this again and again. I always like to differentiate, or I try to differentiate between me not, like, loving the musical itself, because like, I don't really resonate with the story and the characters and that kind of thing, rather than me being like, I didn't like this musical because the people that put it on sucked. Because the people that put it on, it was a local youth theater company called Stage Eater Theater. They did a great job. All their performers are kind of like, they look to be like, I don't know, teenagers, young adults. There are a few like older adults playing some of the older characters, but for the most part, it was very youth focused. They did a great job. There's a lot of fun song and dance numbers in this musical, and there's a lot of dancing in this musical. This musical is very well known for having something called a dream ballet, and there's only one other musical that I know of that kind of has a really long ballet sequence, and that's An American in Paris that does a 17-minute ballet sequence that Gene Kelly does to Gershwin music. This is a dream ballet sequence. I think it's about 12 minutes long, and it happens at the end of Act 1 where Lori has to choose, or is trying to choose, who she wants to go to the box social with, because this is 1902 or whatever. She has to choose between cowboy Curly McLean, who you can tell she wants to be with, and he wants to be with her. And it's like the obvious answer. And I think that's one of the reasons why I find this musical kind of frustrating, is because maybe at the time, this will they, won't they plot tension thingy was like very like, oh, new and exciting. Having seen a lot of musicals and just romantic comedies and TV and movies, it's kind of like you can tell when the obvious choice and they're just trying to delay it to make it tension, and you're just like, why? So yeah, so she has to choose between Curly, the guy she wants to be with, and Judd, this farmhand that works on the farm where Lori lives with her aunt, and he's kind of moody and dark, and he loves Lori, but he's also like an asshole and kind of abusive to her. It's like, oh, is she gonna pick the guy that she loves and he loves her and he treats her well? Or is she gonna pick this other random guy that she doesn't really like, but he loves her, but he is also an asshole to her? And then there's also a couple other characters. There's Ado Annie. I think she's a friend of Lori's, and she's very flirtatious. And there's sort of this romantic comedy trio between her and Will Parker, cowboy that she loves and he loves, and then this peddler who is kind of like a con man named Allie Hakem, who loves Allie and she's kind of into him, but it's more for his money. Like, it's one of those things where you sort of know where things are gonna go. There was a production of Oklahoma, like a Broadway run, a revival that did really well. I think it won a few Tonys. I know they kind of updated some things. So if you're watching Oklahoma, like the 1950s version, if you see a Broadway revival of this, if one comes up anytime soon, or one on the West End or something like that, the Broadway revival that was a few years back is closed. There might be some changes in adaptations, because sometimes that happens. There's a lot of fun numbers. There's a lot of well-known songs. The singing and the dancing, it's a lot of fun, but this is a really long musical. And the dream ballet, like, I don't mind dancing in musicals, but I like dancing when they kind of are singing at the same time and I can get it, rather than like, here's a 12-minute dream ballet sequence of like, ooh, who is she gonna pick? I have a harder time understanding dance. I did an episode about choreography. It's a little bit out of my wheelhouse. But the performers were very talented. They had live musicians on stage, except for the dream ballet sequence where they used a backing track. I know it's hard to find musicians who are going to be able to play a musical like this, because it's very long, but because it takes place in Oklahoma, they had some like fiddles and banjos and kind of more like Oklahoma country sounds. It fit really well with the style. The set pieces were really nice. But I see Oklahoma again. I think now that I've seen it on stage, I'm good. If another local theater company around you is putting it on, I would encourage you to see it, because it is interesting to see this musical and kind of the start of book musicals. Here's the other interesting thing. So Rodgers and Hammerstein's, I don't know if Oklahoma's necessarily their very first musical. They might have done something before this one, but Oklahoma was the first musical that kind of cemented them as musical theater guys to pay attention to, I guess. You know, it kind of started their career, cemented their, or at least was the start of their legacy. And they've done several other shows, South Pacific, King and I, and another show they've done, which was, I believe their last show was The Sound of Music. Within a few weeks of each other, I saw the very first musical Rodgers and Hammerstein ever did, and the very last musical they ever did. Sound of Music is a very popular musical, and most people probably know it more for the film adaptation that came out in 1965 starring Julie Andrews and Christopher Plummer, which I love and is a great movie adaptation. Awesome movie musical. If you've not seen The Sound of Music, it is great. The Broadway run, the stage version, debuted a few years earlier in 1959. Oscar Hammerstein passed away less than a year after its debut. He was able to see the show take off, but didn't see it, wasn't alive for when the movie adaptation and its popularity came about. This was the last show they ever did. I really enjoyed The Sound of Music. Oklahoma is very long and it feels very long. The Sound of Music is very long, but it doesn't feel very long. Like, it still feels like a long musical. This isn't an 80-minute one-act play. This is, I think the movie is close to 3 hours. Sound of Music is based on a true story, although some creative liberties I'm sure were taken, about a lady named Maria. She's a nun in Austria, but the nun life just isn't doing it for her. She feels like there's something more, so she leaves and becomes like an au pair slash nanny kind of position for the Von Trapp family. Captain Von Trapp is an admiral or somebody in the military or the navy, and he's a very strict man. He's got 7 children. They led very strict lives of military drills and not having fun, and then Maria comes in and she sings songs and teaches them music, and the kids start having fun. And at first Captain Von Trapp is all grumpy, but then you find out that he's actually not a bad guy, and he's just a very disciplined man, and he still loves his family. And then Maria and Captain Von Trapp fall in love, but guess what time period it's in. This is taking place in Austria around the time of World War II and the annexation of Austria to Nazi Germany. So the Nazis are coming in and they have to try to flee Austria before Captain Von Trapp gets sent away to the Navy or the military. I can't remember which position he's in. And will they make it? There's Nazis. It's very tense, but it's also a lot of fun. I've seen the movie version a few times. I wouldn't necessarily say The Sound of Music is my favorite movie, but it is one of those ones that I quite enjoy. And if it's your favorite movie or your favorite musical, I can understand why. It's great. The stage version is a little bit different. And here's the thing, anytime that you're adapting something from stage to screen or screen to stage, things are gonna change. You can't keep everything exactly the same. So a couple of the things that I noticed at the beginning, in the movie, I don't really remember this as much, but it's been a while since I've seen the movie. But the stage version focuses a lot more on the start of Maria's journey becoming a nun. Do I wanna be a nun? Is this for me? And then she becomes a nun. Whereas I think like in the musical, the movie musical, it's like she's a nun and then they start singing "How Do We Solve a Problem Like Maria." So they focus a bit more on her start of like, does she want to be a nun? And then there's a lot more of time with her in the abbey and her talking to like Mother Superior, and you know, I think Mother Superior has a song that wasn't in the musical. There's also the character of like the Baroness, who is the woman that Captain Von Trapp is going to marry or propose to before he falls in love with Maria. She has a lot more time on stage than she did in the movie, and she even sings a little bit. I can't remember if she had like a solo song, but she definitely sings. And then there was also a character who was like the butler, kind of head of the household, and I don't remember a character like that. I think they just kind of forgo that in the movie. If there was a character, he wasn't a major character. And the character of Max, who is a friend that of the family, that Uncle Max, that gets them into the big show at the end, he had a bit more screen time, or a bit more time on stage than he did on the screen. This production that I saw was done at the Citadel Theater. They are a professional theater in Edmonton. They always put on good shows. They do a lot of plays, but they also will put on 1 to 2 musicals a year. Their musical for spring 2024 was The Sound of Music. The performers were excellent. Everybody did a great job. The set pieces were amazing. This is a professional theater. It's well done. I think most of the actors are professional actors, but with the kids, I believe the kids were from their theater school. So the Citadel has this foot theater school where they have young performers who can come in and take theater camp in summer and theater lessons and stuff. And the Von Trapp family kids, I mean, I think, well, the oldest is 16 going on 17, as we know from the song. And I think the youngest is like supposed to be 4 or 5. So the show is not a small musical. There's a lot of singing and dancing, and I'm sure the youngest performer was probably like 5 or 6 years old and did a great job. Everybody did a great job in this show. I do love The Sound of Music. And as I kind of mentioned earlier, I found even though it's still a really long show, it flows really well. I've seen the musical, so I kind of knew what was going to happen as far as the plot goes. But the fact that there were kind of some differences from the movie adaptation was really interesting to note. Although I will say with the movie, it's one of those adaptations, now that I've seen the stage show, where I go, okay, everything they changed makes sense. You can't keep every song, you can't keep everything. There's some movies that get adapted where they try to keep it all and it just ends up dragging and running a little bit too long. And then there's some musicals where they kind of know what to cut. Oddly enough, it sort of reminded me of Chicago, although definitely not the same as far as plot goes. But in terms of adaptation, I think Chicago, the movie, did very well adapting from screen and changing. The things they changed made sense how they changed it. Even though there were songs where I was like, damn, they cut the song and I really like the song. When you see the musical on stage and you see the movie version, you go, okay, this probably wouldn't have worked. I really enjoyed The Sound of Music, and it's definitely a show that I would see again on stage, or I would just watch the movie again because the movie is awesome. Can't fucking beat Julie Andrews singing because she's amazing. So yeah, so those were the two musicals that I've seen for this series so far. The other musicals are still to come, but I will say that there are a couple shows that are on my list that are getting productions. Next year, there's a few shows that I can get the chance to see. Whenever I do this series, I will definitely let you know if I've watched the stage version of this or the film version of this musical, so you kind of know, because again, there are differences between movie adaptations and stage musicals. I think that basically wraps up this episode. Remember, you can go to takemetotheworld.com, click the podcast category, and click on episode 25 to get the resources for the musicals that I've talked about today. Watch the movie version for both of these because they are available. Thanks very much for listening to this podcast and coming with me on this golden age musical journey that I'm starting here. Hope you enjoyed this episode and have a great day.